This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yes, it's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Saturday. Oh my goodness. Saturday already. How did we do this? Oh, Johnny, Jess, I sometimes you get to a Saturday and you're like, how did we get here? All I know is that to see you guys here makes it me understand it's a good Saturday. I'm happy we made it here. Jess, Johnny, how you doing, man?
Doing great.
Man, I'm doing all right. Up.
Jess, you jump in.
I'm doing great. And you know how we got here, Tim? One day at a time. I'm just happy to be here with y'all. Johnny, how you doing?
Doing great. I mean, it's Saturday, so we're happy to be here. Listener, we're happy that you're out there tuned in and, you know, busting pencils with us today. I mean, Tim, it's feeling like spring. I know it's a little early in some places, but it's feeling like spring, especially in terms of education. You know, all the conversations around, okay, what is really happening? You know, brace ourselves. It's been an onslaught of, you know, meetings and discussions on what the upcoming school year is going to look like. But I'm happy to have this conversation today because, you know, even though there is a lot of change on the horizon, change isn't always bad. I know our initial gut reaction to a lot of the, you know, imposed change can feel bad. And certainly there's some suggestions to do some things that go against what we all would agree is, you know, best practices for all students. But in the midst of it, I do see some exciting things happening. And man, I'm excited for today's conversation. And listeners, glad that you're here because we're going to talk about what's that change and what are some of the things that we can be doing, you know, to continue some really great work that's happening out there. And there's always room for improvement. So one of our favorite guys who talks about where we can do that improvement and embraces change like none other, Tim, give him an introduction.
Oh, man, we are so happy to have him back. Yes, from the Association of College and University Educators, AQ. Oh, yeah, that partnership with Busted Pencils, too, reminding everybody. Jonathan Gerko, he is back. Jonathan, what's happening in your world, our friend?
Hey, great to be back, Tim, Johnny, Jess. It's so awesome to be with you. For your YouTube watchers, I'm wearing my Belong Campus-wide t-shirt because we can't exclude anybody from this enterprise and we got to make sure everybody feels as if they belong and we're serving them. So I am proudly wearing my Belong Campus-wide t-shirt, which is part of a great program and partnership we have with Marjorie Haas at the Council of Independent Colleges, as well as public institution. And Tim, Johnny, Jess, I found my Ticonderoga 2 wooden pencil. I'm going to bust it because it's time to bust some pencils.
All right.
I love that. Oh, my goodness. That was totally, we did not set Jonathan up for that. That was great.
Is that unprecedented? Is that a show first?
I think
that
so.
That could be one of, a lot like that. Wow. So YouTubers, you YouTubers out there, you can see it. You know, in fact, maybe Jonathan is starting a trend here. Guests right now, if you're watching, bring your own pencil. Maybe we'll have to find out if there's a budget for us to send pencils out to our guests. I don't know. Jess is kind of, what do you think, Jess? You're scratching your chin there.
I could send an email.
You know, but Jonathan, great piece out in Medium, lots of different places. We're going to definitely get to that. But before we do, though, Jonathan, gotta get your read on the kind of where we are at this moment. It's, you know, we're coming off the week where the Department of Education was literally cut in half, and Linda McMahon full out admitted in one of the interviews I saw that yes, this is the beginning of the end. And the end of the Department of Education. I just wonder what you're thinking. What does this mean? How, you know, is AQ hearing this? Colleagues, give us a sense of the world from your point of view.
Well, what's happening will hurt families and children and students. Full stop. Right? You look. Let's entertain. It doesn't deserve entertaining, but let's entertain for the moment that the Department of Education was overstaffed. We know it wasn't because it had been running on skeleton crews and what have you. No way was there bureaucratic bloat to 50%. That's just nonsense. And what that means, K-12, when a Title I coordinator needs some help to solve a little problem or a little glitch, there's going to be nobody to call. And Title I, going back to Lyndon Johnson, we know that history, is one of the most important and successful anti-poverty in education programs in this country's history. And one of my favorite champions for social justice through economic justice, Reverend William Barber, he leads the Poor People's Movement. He's now at Yale Divinity, after doing extraordinary work nationwide and in North Carolina. He estimates, sure, there are 40 million Americans officially in poverty. But when you add the number of people $500 away, right? You need to change your tires, a surprise bill, $500 away from poverty, that number balloons to 140 million Americans. Of every race and creed. And in fact, there are many, many more white poor Americans than there are poor Americans of any other race or ethnicity. So it's going to hurt families. Similarly, I got a chance to listen to Scott Jasek last week, former co-founder and writer, editor of Inside Higher Ed. I call him Jasek Unleashed now because he's retired and he can finally speak his mind. And he said, a $900 billion cut to Medicaid, that is a different country. That's not hurt or just a little, or belt tightening. That is a less healthy company. So what's happening right now is going to hurt families. It's going to hurt students. You look at higher ed, the cuts to funding right now, it's focused on research. It hasn't yet touched Pell or Stafford. But who do you call when there's a little glitch in the Pell status or the loan or blah, blah, blah? And similarly with research, for a century, America led the world in the most cutting-edge research that has made the planet more healthy and flourishing. And yes, we have our problems, economic inequality and environmental degradation. And do we think we can solve those without research and innovation? I doubt it. We will not lead the world. I don't know who will lead the world, because we also need democracy. We need an open society. We need a place where new ideas can flourish, for new research to develop, to make the world a more flourishing place. And are there other democracies with the resources to lead that kind of cutting edge, life-saving, humanity-saving research? No, the answer is there is not. So this is not a good time.
Johnny, what are you going to do?
All right. I mean, that's what we're going to do, is we're going to figure out what it is that we do to make our way through this mess, because it is a mess. And I like that Jonathan, you know, laid it out really simply. This is the news that we're hearing, the changes at the federal level, the impact that that has on our state levels, and then that does trickle down to our local schools. This stuff does hurt children, families, and community. It is not supporting a stronger democracy. It's making it harder for everybody, especially those who need it the most. I love the the reference to Title I. Hey, just for our listener who's tuned in, when we talk about this education stuff, if you're not familiar, Title I, right, is a program, Jonathan talked about it, introduced by Lyndon Johnson in 1965. But Title I is essentially, the allocation of federal funding to be used for educational programming and services for those who need it, those who need it the most. So really helping our children experiencing poverty, families experiencing poverty, part of a war on poverty, not a war on the poor. And, you know, the shift that we're seeing right now, we talked about it in the show earlier this week, Tim, just seems like all this stuff, when we boil it down, it's not so much that it's against DEI, because we can prove till we're blue in the face that all of these efforts have actually included more students, right? Which is the goal here. How do we benefit all people in democracy? But, you know, it's more of attacking and making it harder on the working families of this country. And that's where this stuff's going to hit the hardest. So it's a sad day in terms of that. And then there's never a silver lining in these kind of rollbacks. But, you know, we are in a response and a reframe mode in education where we start to embrace, okay, if those are the changes, then what do we need to do? And part of that is advocating that those were really important, essential programs and fundings and staff positions. So hopefully that we can advocate loudly. Certainly we've captured that, you know, there are lawsuits filed by unions. There are responses to this that are appropriate to say, hey, these are actually really important aspects of supporting a strong public education system. And that is essential to democracy. So, you know, where do we turn it now towards? What do we do in the trenches, you know, in these coming days, but especially as we're planning for next year, what do we do as teachers to be our best educators? And that's at all levels.
Absolutely, man. It's Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Our guest, Jonathan Gierko from the Association of College and University Educators. Yeah, before we get to his piece, he's got a great piece in Medium. We're going to get there. Higher education, though, too. We started talking about this, Jonathan. Before we get into the piece, when we come back, let's talk a little bit about how the Department of Ed and higher education, what are going to be the ramifications? More Busted Pencils when we get back. How to fly. It's Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Educated educators talking education. Let's put it out there. Yeah, still the best bumper music of any show out there. Thank you, producer Jess.
You're very loving welcome.
It. Just makes me, you know, even when we're talking about the things we're talking about, you come back in with a song like that and you're like, okay, maybe we got this. Maybe we got this. We do. We have our great friend, Jonathan Gierko, coming back to visit to say hello, talk about things, how they're going. Also, has got a piece in Medium. We're going to get to that. We were talking, though, oh, man, 50% of the Department of Education gone. What are the implications? A little bit about Title I, communities, children, all of that. Jonathan, I think, though, too, particularly in your role with AQ, higher education, maybe in our circles, we know there's an impact in the Department of Education and what's happening there. But for my neighbor who might hear this and say, well, this is K-12. I don't know what colleges are concerned about. What are you hearing from higher education in the standpoint of what are our colleagues in higher education making of this moment?
Yeah. Look, the fear, the anxiety is real. By the way, sidebar, Jess, love the music. I have more often been introduced and outroed with the theme song from the Dick Van Dyke Show, so I much prefer your musicals. So I had the real honor to speak at the closing plenary last week of the National Association of System Heads. So these are the systems that educate 75% of all the students in baccalaureate public programs and a very large percentage of the community colleges. So in one room, you've got just a huge segment of the sector. And of course, a lot of anxiety about the lawsuits, the defunding, research and otherwise. But my message, and there is a positive point here, but we have to step back and look at the conditions that created these politics and our responsibility in creating those conditions. And what are they? Well, there are 37 million Americans with some college but no degree. They tried it, and for whatever reason, they said, you know, it's not worth it. We lose, on average, when you take the weighted average of community college high and baccalaureate enrollment, half of our students, we have a 50% dropout rate. And only 2.6% of them ever re-enroll, according to National Student Clearinghouse. So those are people who say, yeah, you know, I'm not sure it was worth it. You add on top of that, two-thirds of Americans who are saying, I only see little or no value in higher ed. Those are not winning constituencies. And my apologies, when you talk to a political scientist, every problem looks like a political problem. But that is not a winning constituency. So my question is, how do we rebuild the constituency in support of education and higher education? So the thesis I pose to the group is that lived value, our value, is not in another report about our economic impact. Lived value is in class. Lived value is at the point of delivery. When a student has an amazing class and goes home and tells their parents, or at Thanksgiving, tells his drunk uncle, it's awesome. College is awesome. It's worth it. And that is in our control to ensure that the quality of teaching and learning, the core of what we do, is of the highest quality it possibly can be. And guess what? It's universal. Good teaching isn't for this group of students or that group of students. Sure, some students benefit more. If I didn't have a great high school education, I'm going to benefit more from somebody who's already an A student and sort of hitting the ceiling. But every student benefits, and this is corridor work in our control. I think it's also safe politics. So what I am encouraging is higher ed, don't be distracted by the noise. Focus on signal, what is real. Dan Greenstein, the phenomenal former chancellor of the PASHE system, Tim, he said his three rules of thought are, what is it? Let's just understand what it is that's coming at us. Two, does it matter, right? I mean, and if we can't say yes to two, then we don't go to three, which is, what do we do about it? That can help us avoid a lot of the noise from the signal. And while the feds are telling us to stop doing a lot of things, what we can do is ensure excellence in every class.
Johnny, jump in there, man.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And, as a teacher and as a college professor, too, so I get to double down teaching teachers. That's what we do, right? We take an oath to do no harm, to do the least amount of harm in our classrooms, and to do excellent teaching the best we know that that's possible. And so we're going to continue to do that. But I think there's an important kind of pivot, a shift right now. And Jonathan, you help us put language to that. How do we focus on those great things that all students are benefiting from, that are helping to make our classrooms great spaces to be a learner? And that's not just happening by circumstance, just like because of a policy change. It's happening because great teachers work hard to be even better. And they're going to keep doing that. So I love how you're phrasing that. I love some of the things that you're pointing us towards as educators. Like, hey, these are things that we know are working and that we're going to continue to do. So how do we begin to, you know, take note of those, discuss them, have accountability for them in a way that helps ensure that they will continue to be best practices, not only just in higher ed, but all, through all of our schools?
Yeah. Man. Well, Jonathan, go ahead, comment.
Well, another dimension of this, and we can get into the op-ed in Inside Higher Ed or maybe after the break, you know, which was provocatively titled, Higher Ed is Not a Public Good, but it could be.
Right.
But a core idea there, and it's in my book, Publicization, which you've been great champions of, is this notion of exclusion, right? The war against DEI was getting really, really hot as I was writing, as the book was coming out. And so the book, I'm not sure you'll find the word include everyone, inclusion in it. Mm-hmm. What you do find is we can't exclude, because as soon as we exclude, we make something more private than public. And I think if we stay in this notion of let's not exclude anyone, we're also in political safe harbor.
We're going to talk a lot more about that. Yeah, it's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Our guest, actually our friend, Jonathan Gurko here from the Association of College and University Educators. That's AQ. Yeah, they are too. Also great partners of the show of Busted Pencils. When we get back though, let's talk about this, you know, exclusion, if we're not for it, and what does inclusion in higher ed mean? Back in a minute.
Fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. We got our friend, that's right, our friend and our guest, Jonathan Gurko here, author of Publicization, also recent author, I mean, always putting stuff out there, we appreciate it, but recent author of a op-ed piece that we're going to dive into a little more closely. But love where we left off before the break, listener, if you're just tuning in, to bring things up to speed. We've been discussing kind of the state of education, you know, in this nation, especially when it comes to the importance of including everybody in a democracy, and that education by and large, we assume so often is a public good, but higher education isn't necessarily, I mean, we could probably say it isn't a public good in terms of how it's accessed by folks in this country. And when we begin to think about this, when we talk about democracy, folks, right, we can boil it down to every democracy has some signifying characteristics to it. It's that everyone has a voice and that voice is valued. Everybody has a responsibility to participate, and that all interests, all decisions are made in the interest of the common good. So we left off in the last segment kind of with a statement that I agree with, Jonathan, that what we don't want to do as teachers or as leaders in education, especially in higher ed, is get into the practice of being exclusionary. And right now we're in this either or with the, you know, attack on DEI. So don't do inclusion. It's like, hold on. So don't do democracy, because including everybody is a fundamental premise of being part of a democracy. So I've said it before in here, it's a war of language words right now, but they're really important. And what we don't want to do is get into the practice of being exclusionary. That's anti-democratic. And we left off saying, you know, that's a harbor we don't necessarily want our boats in as good educators, right? We don't want to get into the practice of being exclusionary. And so I wonder, Jonathan, can you elaborate a bit on that? You know, how do we avoid becoming more exclusionary, or how do we work towards higher education as a public good?
Yeah. Well, thanks for setting up the question so well. You know, I think we Americans have a funny relationship with things that are exclusive, right? We love to be in our special clubs and maybe even our gated communities, and that feels fancy. It feels exclusive. But how dare you exclude me from something? I'm an American, right? I have the same rights as anybody else. Well, which one is it, my friend? And, you know, those stats I rattled off in the last segment, you know, I think it suggests this notion of, hey, it's not for me. I feel excluded from this for whatever reasons. So I wrote this piece in Inside Higher Ed titled Higher Ed is Not a Public Good, but it could be. For a couple reasons. First, the American Association of College and Universities was about to have its annual conference. The theme was higher education as a public good. So, you know, I like to be provocative and mix things up a little bit. So that was intentionally timed. But I've also sensed a lot of virtue signaling, sort of chest thumping of we're a public good, we're a public good. Well, no, we're not if what we do is rife with exclusionary practices. So if I have to apply that long time-honored tradition is an opportunity to say no. It's an opportunity to exclude. Very different from what I think is a genius new approach, direct admit. Direct admit, hey, you've got the grades and we've automatically admitted you to half a dozen colleges in this state. What a welcoming, non-exclusionary practice. Here's another one. We know transfer from community college to baccalaureate is riddled with problems, credit reviews, the time, the delay, blah, blah, blah. Why not blanket auto accept the credits? Mm-hmm. If we stand behind what we do in the community colleges, then why wouldn't we auto admit, nudge it in the opposite direction and put the burden on the receiving institution to perhaps knock some credits out, but not have to accept every credit in? Cost is an obvious excluder. If it's free or nearly free, or if the debt is retirable in this economy, right? So I'm not saying free is the only option. If the debt is manageable and retirable, that's less exclusionary. If the cost is prohibitive, it's not for me. So I think there are all sorts of things that higher ed can do to be more public, more non-exclusionary, and as the piece argues, to be more good. And that's my parochial interest in let's make sure every moment of teaching and learning is good. Good teaching, good learning. And then, is it a public good? Yeah, it's a public good in the economic sense. It's also more public. It's also more good.
I'm a fan of gooder. I love things when they're good. You know, come on, messing around. But Jonathan, too, the language, just to put it out there, is that, you know, the attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, this kind of comes back to how we, and maybe even in higher education, how we do talk about things intentionally. And you say, like, you know, as you point out, Americans, quote, like to have exclusion, but at the same time are very abrasive towards being excluded. And, you know, if we talked in a way to say, so you want us to exclude your child, your grandson, your niece, your next door neighbor, I'd be like, well, gosh, no. And say, okay, then, yeah, you know, this is what we're talking about. So when you hear the word inclusion, hey, I don't want to get all twisted up and caught into, you know, like, quote, language policing. But you say our own self-inflicted wounds also typically come from our inability to reframe sometimes the language that people use against to say, go ahead, Jonathan, jump.
Yeah. I mean, what's the equivalent of our Walmart greeter? Right. Who is our Walmart greeter that says, come on in, let's get you learning? I mean, maybe some of the online competency-based, you can start anytime you want. Come on in. Let's get you in class. Let's get you some learning.
Right.
And I say that with respect. I teach every term, and I try to build a 15-week learning arc. The time matters. The learning journey matters. Somebody couldn't bomb into week four and be on that same journey. So I don't mean to oversimplify, but how do we remove those exclusionary barriers? That said, I think we can reframe. I think we've got a lot of policies to do to win back and rebuild back our coalition, but let's not confuse what is in our control and what will never be in our control. We can look at the whole history of the United States, the Hofstadter's famous book about anti-intellectualism in American life. Intellectuals are always an easy target. Places of new ideas and dissenting ideas are always a populist target over the centuries. That may be our cross to bear, and let's bear it proudly, because that is what we do in a free and open and democratic society.
Yeah, absolutely. Thinking about that. So, you know, pivot then. Hey, Jonathan, on top of the Inside Higher Ed piece, you got another piece out here too, that teaching in this moment, the one thing on which we can all agree, every student deserves a world-class education. Yeah, right? I mean, nice quick read here, though, and I love that. You know, we'll definitely have a link to it in the podcast show description so that people can check it out. But, you know, we can control that. And in fact, you know, is this all the way back to the beginning of the show? And he said, you know, and is this one of those things that helps create a narrative of what about higher education is gooder?
Yeah. I mean, maybe I lack imagination because all I think about is AQ and quality teaching. But my goodness, if there's one thing we can do is make sure every student experiences great teaching, has the opportunity for great learning. It is a universal. I don't know how you attack it. Quality for all, a great education for all. Although I don't underestimate enemies of higher ed to find clever ways, but I think it's one of these things like motherhood and the American flag and apple pie.
Jonathan, what you're thinking about that though, too, putting this, yeah, we can always be better. As you said, you know, I'm sure that there could be other ways that people who want to attack could find an attack. But the idea too, I want to go back to another kind of description or scene you created, that student, that son, that nephew, that grandson at the table at Thanksgiving, during Thanksgiving break, talking about a wonderful experience they had with Dr. so-and-so, and wow, I never, like, those are the things that actually, you know, there's a branding there, right? That faculty could own in ways. And this comes back to the work that AQ and what you do with AQ is really setting up much better teaching. So I don't know, John, some thoughts.
That's the goal. You know, there's a famous, I think it's one of the more durable statistics in K-12 research, that I hate public education, I love my child's school. Right. And we may not be able to overcome that in higher ed either, depending on the mood, the gestalt of the moment, at higher ed, indoctrination, encampments versus, I love my, you know, go Bears, go Dragons down the street.
Right.
That said, you know, politics are local. You've heard the expression retail politics, street level politics. If I help my students as a teacher, professor, leader, have a great class. You know, I share that with my friends. I share that with my parents. I share that with my family. We're building our loyalty. We're building our constituency. Mm-hmm. Simple as that, such that when I vote, when I get called on a public opinion poll, that's what's in my head. Oh yeah, my nephew's loving it.
Right.
Can that overcome the mainstream media pounding away certain memes and themes? I think so. I want to hope so. If nothing else, it's in our control to certify professors in AQ. There are other ways to do it. We're pretty proud of our approach, and it's proven to partner with institutions and to see great teaching flourish. How's college? It's great.
It's great.
It's for me. It's worth it.
I love that. It's for me. That sense of saying, you know, you're down the corner. I'm visiting my parents here in Pittsburgh right now, and you know, kind of in one of the areas outside of Pittsburgh that, you know, is still here. It is in 2025, suffering from the collapse of the steel mills. And with that, so many families and children here still that could benefit from an inclusion, an access to education, higher education, particularly. Jonathan, man, we love having you on the show.
I love being on the show. Thank you.
We love it. Hey, you know what? Hey, guess what? Tim and Johnny will try to figure this out when we get back. Know it. It's Busted Pencils, and we're back. Fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Man, truly, too. Our guest for the show was Jonathan Gurko, president and founder of the Association of College and University Educators, book publicizations, all kinds of stuff in inside higher education, and his new piece in Medium. Love having Jonathan on the show, Johnny. You know, again, you know, we seem to talk about this moment. This moment continues to need to be talked about and talked about because guess what? The moments are changing. Really leaned into the very beginning of this, though, too, is that, you know, this is the, what according to Linda McMahon is the beginning of the end of the Department of Education with 50% of the staff now out of a job, and getting Jonathan's kind of insight, and then, you know, higher education. So I love having Jonathan on, Johnny. It's always such a fun show.
Always, man. And I love anytime we get together with our listeners and we talk about what's working in schools, and remember that there's a lot of really great teachers out there, a lot of
lots of great. You name it, it's out there. Lots of things.
Lots of great learning. Lots of great work that's being done.
Yeah. Well, Johnny, you know, we'll get him back, though. Yeah, Johnny, I just thinking about that when you say there are so many great things going on. Yeah, man, you're back. Finish your thought there, dude.
I mean, I have no idea what's going on today with the technology. I was here, then it was blank screen. So I was just saying, just remember that all the great work that's happening out there in classrooms and in schools and school leaders who are getting together. And I like how Jonathan said it today, to really think about what would it mean to have all of our education accessible and part of a public good. and that that's really important, and that there's really great work out there, and that education is part of a government responsibility. So, I mean, I think voters have even showed us that. Remember, like, a bipartisan voting in really red counties and parts of our country voted in favor of supporting public schools. So to see this administration really hurt that good work that's happening, or to even threaten the support for, you know, even more good work is kind of dangerous. It's sad to see. But I know that teachers are going to continue to be doing the great work that they're doing and getting better at it all the time. So we just need to figure out how to line things up and support it.
I think, you know, and this is the conversation too, that we have, you know, truly with our neighbors to say, this is what we're trying to do here, you know, every week on Busted Pencils, whether you're listening to the podcast on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, if you're listening to this full hour of Busted Pencils on Saturdays, downloading it, however you're doing. But, you know, we're having these conversations that hopefully frame things in ways that as you're out, you know, taking the dog for a walk at the kids' Little League game, and, you know, somebody steps up and says, wow, did you see how the Department of Education today was reduced by 50%? And you can enter that conversation from the standpoint, what we don't want to do is get uptight and defensive and, well, you know, and attack back. In a way, we want to be able to have a conversation with our neighbors, with our good friends, with our brother-in-laws, with all of them to say, yeah, you know, and like, there are some things that concern me when we start hearing about, you know, massive cutting, because, you know, in my kids' school, this is really going to affect the special education students, of which really benefit from a thriving, there's never been a thriving Department of Education. And I'm concerned, so we can talk about it in ways that are healthy, that allow us to have conversations so that, you know, everything isn't an attack and a defense, Johnny. And I think that's what I really, you know, like all of our guests too, kind of come on and give us ways to just say, you know what, let's talk about this in a way that isn't a defense or an attack, but let's have a conversation, you know. Let's have a beer. Let's have an iced tea. Let's have a veggie taco, whatever it is. but we can engage. I don't know, Johnny, you know, too much?
No, man, it's never too much to stop and say, hey, let's have a taco. I'm here for that. I mean, but no, also I really like where this whole conversation is going. How do we keep pivoting and working together to strengthen democracy? Regardless, remember, don't abate in advance, work together, build solidarity, build trust, and keep doing that great work that you're all doing out there.
Yeah, make sure you do that, because that's what we do every week here at Busted Pencils. You know, makes me just kind of feel like we're doing good work here and engaging. You say, Johnny, you always point out dancing in rough times. Well, yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to sing and we're going to dance, because, hey, you know what? That's what Busted Pencils is for. And Jess is always going to be bringing us that most incredible, awesome, yeah, dance music. Let's call it that. Or as Jonathan was trying to say, you know, a little bit of headbanging for the old people. And now for your moment of zen. If we want to have an effect on the world, we need to emphasize those things which will make students more active citizens and more moral people.
Thanks for listening to Busted Pencils today. And remember to grab great podcasts chock full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course on the Civic Media website, or on BustedPencils.com. Hey, don't you be late for homeroom on Monday. And make sure you catch next week's class and session on Wednesday. And you find us for free throws and face-offs on Fridays. And of course, just like today, catch Busted Pencils at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for an hour of your favorite Blue Collar Scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.